Comrade Joe Tbilisi, this is BeelPod.com coming to you from our studios high atop Tbilisi's scenic Rustaveli Avenue. Today is Thursday, the 13th of December, 2012. On this date, in 1621, the first export of furs from what is now the United States occurred. In 1937, the Rape of Nanking. If you don't know what that is, 1.3 billion Chinese people do, so find out. It's important. In 2000, Al Gore conceded the presidential election when five Supreme Court justices appointed George Bush president. In 2003, former Iraqi President Saddam Hussein is captured near his hometown of Tikrit. Richard Holbrooke, the American diplomat, died 2 years ago today. May he rest in peace. Today is Carlos Montoya, the guitar player, and Taylor Swift's birthday. I don't know who Taylor Swift is, but she's famous. We are Cameron Christensen, Matthias Hooter, and me, Mark Mullen. Nothing we say can be associated with any of our past, present, or future employers. My Georgian Journal and Kvitis Politra column this week is about judges disagreeing with prosecutors, which has happened for the first time in high-profile cases in Georgia in the 15 years that I've been watching things, and what this means for an independent judiciary. A special thanks to all the Tbilpod.com listeners who have posted on the forum or emailed us their comments and suggestions for the podcast. Richard Lax wins a free lifetime subscription to Tbilpod. Thank you very much, Richard. If you've not commented, we still want your thoughts. Very interesting discussion going on in the forum. What do you want more of? What do you want less of? You're luckily contradicting each other in a lot of the things that you say, so it allows us to do whatever we want. We really don't want consensus on change from listeners, but we do want to hear from you.
Yeah. We don't want a revolution from the audience or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows where that could lead, all right? So anyway,
forcing us to take family vacations and abandoning the studio here.
Post on the forum or send us an email. So, Dmitry Kitoshvili, former head of the Georgian National Communications Commission, accused an unnamed former high-ranking official of UNM of pressuring him to testify against former defense minister Irakli Okurashvili in 2007. Kitoshvili said on December 11th that he lodged a formal complaint with the prosecutor's office. He said in a statement, quote, "As for naming the individuals, I do not know if that is possible at the moment, taking into consideration the interests of the investigation. However, I can say that they were very senior officials," end quote. And, you know, I want to make sure that I've got my immunity arrangement, you know, set up before anything happens there.
I was kind of interested in the story because I was wondering why the GNCC head was involved in the case at all in testifying against Okurashvili. And apparently what the case was that he, through force, acquired 2.5% of Geocell shares. And he paid for them. But he also threatened the testimony in 2007 was that he paid for them, but he also threatened, and that's why he got them. So interestingly,
he got them for 11 lari and 95 tetri.
No, actually, he paid. I think as far as I understood, he paid
600 lari.
Yeah. No, I don't.
I don't know.
As far as I understand, it was actually a good amount. But now, what's interesting is the quote that where he says he doesn't name anybody. He actually, in a Georgian source, points to Adeyashvili, saying that he blames Adeyashvili, and that it wasn't Adeyashvili who did it, but that they exerted pressure on him through the Kudi.
Through Kudi.
Yeah, the constitutional defenders.
Yeah, and from people who have worked in that sector at the time, I heard that that Geocell, at that time when Okurashvili was involved in it, had like special treatment from the regulator. That was before the Swedes and Turks bought it. But yeah, so Okurashvili made, more money by having a preferential treatment from the authorities. Yeah.
Speaking of defense ministers making money, the defense ministry, the current defense ministry, has sent a document to the prosecutor's office regarding the ministry's purchasing of guns under Bachua Khalaya. According to the ministry, in the summer of 2012, the ministry purchased tens of thousands of old secondhand automatic guns, AK-47s and AKS-47s, and paid 290 euros per gun, even though the market price is less than 50 euros. In total, the ministry paid 11 million euros for the guns, and the money was transferred to the account of an offshore company registered in Panama.
So I guess the Panamanian offshore companies are quite popular with Ministry of Defense people.
Yeah, what is it about Panama? Why, you know? Also, yeah. John McCain, born in Panama. Coincidence? But, you know, I don't know, you know?
But on U.S. territory.
Well, that's what he says. That you know, nobody's says, yeah. worried about his birth certificate. Funny thing, him being white and all, you know.
But also, where is the market price for Kalashnikovs, 50 euros? Somalia? Like, is it Central Asia?
Well,
I mean, like,
funny,
is there, like,
you
know, an eBay?
Funny you should mention, you know, that. I remember when I lived in Malawi, and what was one of the largest refugee camps in the world in Malawi for Mozambican refugees before the Rome Agreement was signed in, whatever it was, 1992. When the agreement was signed and the Mozambicans upstaked and decided to head back to Mozambique before any repatriation programs could get going, thereby annoying all of the people that were set to benefit from that, there were Kalashnikovs for sale. And they were a lot less than 290 euros. I mean, you know, that wasn't exactly the market, but I mean, it's an incredible amount of production of those things all over the place, particularly in China. And I would be, I mean, to me, you know, much closer to 40 or 50 makes sense. I don't know. Anyway.
But do you pay VAT on that? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Good question.
Any arms dealers in our audience?
Let us know. By the way, for anybody interested, that I can't remember, what's his name? The New York Times guy who wrote The Gun? Who had
Smith or something?
No. There's a book called The Gun about the Kalashnikov, written by a New York Times guy who's written a lot of stuff about Georgia, a very good war correspondent. He always stays at the Ipati by the opera and scorning the Marriott Radisson, which I always admire. And Betsy's, yeah, you know. But he actually would go to the Betsy's bar, so that makes me feel right.
C.J. Chivers.
Chivers, right. Chivers. Exactly, yes, that's exactly. C.J. Chivers, called the gun. So check that out.
Yeah, I think the guy who invented the Kalashnikov has a very interesting story behind him.
For sure. He's still, I mean, if he's not around now, he was around till very recently. The verbal confrontation, a yelling match, took place between two ex-defense ministers, Achalaya and Okorashvili, at the Matrosov prison. Okorashvili's lawyer told reporters about it on Monday, though he himself claimed not to know the cause. Later, prison minister Sosar Subadi denied any incident between the ex-defense ministers and declared Okorashvili just shouted something from his cell, which, I don't know, doesn't sound like, you know, Sosar was too informed about what was going on. But it's a pretty small prison, right?
Why do the two hate each other so much? Do you know the backstory about that? Why are they, like, arch nemesis?
That Okorashvili was defiant and was, like, Mr. Tough Guy, and then Achalaya, you know, pulled him in and arrested him. And things happened for a certain period of time, and then Okorashvili had his full television confession.
Recanting everything.
Oh, Achalaya was the guy who arrested Okorashvili.
And supposedly the rumors are that Achalaya was directly involved in whatever happened that had Okorashvili go on TV and say, oh, it was all just a big mistake. And then Okorashvili saw him at an airport somewhere.
It was a hotel restroom
somewhere, and, fisticuffs, and, yeah, big mess. Those are all unconfirmed rumors, by the way. Another unconfirmed rumor, but, you know, that's what we're all about here at Tuilpod.com. Energy Minister and Bidzina Dzmakatsi Kachi Kaladze's Dzmakatsi, former soccer forward Georgi Demetradze, was supposedly released from prison yesterday, though there's no confirmation of this. Demetradze had been in prison since the spring 2011. He was sentenced to 6 years on charges of having links with criminal authorities as well as participating in illegal betting.
Did he play in Italy? Do we know that? Because a lot of players were prosecuted in Italy for being aligned with the mafia and fixing games and betting on them.
Well, and I think we also reported on that during the pre-election period, that Kaladze's stuff was investigated, right? In Italy?
Right, yeah.
No idea.
It was investigated.
Sports is not our shtick here at Tpil Pod. We apologize for that. So anybody knows anything about forward Demetradze and buddy of Kaladze's, Let us know about that. Justice Minister Ted Tsiloukiani gave an English language interview with France24.com about the Justice Ministry and the priorities that which are correcting the results of the Saakashvili's selective justice regime, as she calls it, and leading the country towards NATO and the EU. It's an interesting interview and a rare chance to hear her in English, so check it out if you get the chance. Ministry of Interior claim that Gheorghe Lord-Kipanidze, former Deputy Interior Minister and current head of the Tbilisi City Hall's security service, used a fake passport. Lord-Kipanidze confirmed that he owned a passport issued under the name Gocha Tsereteli, but he clarified that the fake passports were used by employees of the Ministry of Interior.
So, but he should not be able to use that passport anymore because he no longer works for the Ministry of Interior, A. And B, what I think is interesting is now they're kind of trying, it seems like they're trying to cover up or, you know, say like, oh yeah, everyone within the MIA had fake passports. We all traveled on them, no? I mean, so coming back to the Merabishvili passport.
Right. And one aspect to that is that after the elections, the Ugolava, the mayor of Tbilisi, moved some of the security people from the Ministry of Interior under the Tbilisi municipality to be his bodyguards and to provide security for local buildings. Other parts of the MIA were moved under the president's administration, the people who are supposedly making sure that the phone calls between government officials are safe and are not tapped.
Or are tapped.
Who knows?
I mean, it just seems to... Seems to me this really brings up some issues relating to the elections, like that there's always fear about fake IDs floating around in the elections. It seems as if, I'm not sure what Otsneba is trying to sort of prove by all of this, but I mean, it does seem to show that people with the Ministry of, with the Ministry of Interior are able to,
print stuff,
whatever they want under whatever names, whenever they feel like it. And it's not clear what types of internal controls there are for that. Next week, Parliament will be discussing the amnesty law and the 2013 state budget. If you want up-to-date info on what's going on in Parliament, sign up for TI's free text message service.
And for that, you go to transparency.ge/en for English, and then on the front page, you find a field that says Parliamentary Text Alerts. You click on that, then you find a button, subscribe, and then you fill out the form, put in your number, and select what language you want the messages in and which committees of parliament or which topics you're interested in, and then you should start
or all of them if all of them if you want. That is only for Georgian mobile phone numbers, we hasten to add.
So it's free for the recipient. I'm just curious, is that being offered free of charge to TI?
No.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, we
so only do it if you really want it.
yeah. No frivolous, dabblers in parliamentary affairs. Okay, so regarding amnesty updates, where are we with that?
So apparently, as of the middle of this week, there were already 1,685 people released, and it's anticipated that up to 6,500 people will ultimately be released from prison. The interesting thing there also is that apparently the criteria are unclear. I don't know if either of you have encountered criteria. I thought that I had at some point heard criteria, but now I'm thinking maybe someone just told me that, because I thought that you had served 2/3 of your sentence and it was for some kind of, under some level of crime and you could be released. And then I actually just talked with someone whose brother is in prison for a serious crime, and he said that his sentence was shortened by the remainder of his sentence was shortened by one quarter, which I guess was not what the original promise was. They were expecting, I think, at least 1/3 or something. But they're also they've got the case in Strasbourg and everything because they think that it was it's Svaneti back in the day. But the interesting thing here also is that there are a lot of concerns about witness protection, because there's no witness protection program in Georgia. And so I think there are going to be many releases of people who have been charged with hooliganism and aggravated assault. And I think there's this concern about potential for retribution because witnesses are public. I mean, you're kind of Anyone can just come and find you now.
And in Tbilisi, many things are public. If two or three people know about something, soon more people know about it. So rumors travel fast.
That could, that's something we've mentioned that on the show before, that if someone's to be released, you know, that making sure that that witnesses hear about that. I mean, not that a witness protection program would be necessarily so easy here, you know.
No, it would be very difficult.
Where would people go? That, you know, there's no Cleveland in Georgia.
Tel Aviv.
Yeah, I don't know. Shua Chevi. So that's something to be worked out.
But the thing that's going to be interesting for the future, though, is that when you don't have witness protection programs and when you do make people publicly testify and give testimony and their names will be released and the people who maybe ultimately end up in jail know exactly who it is, you have people who do not want to serve as witnesses, which is, I mean, you already have that in systems where there is witness protection. But, I mean, when you look at, I mean, people go out of their way to avoid their civic duty of serving as a witness when they see a crime.
Very understandably. And particularly considering that there's not a particularly good word in Georgian for whistleblower. You know, the words used for those that, they tend more towards, you know, rat and
snitch.
Snitch. And yeah, exactly. Police detained a guy who had been pardoned by Mishra several days ago. On Tuesday, he was detained on charges of attempted murder, apparently attacked an unidentified person on Tamaramepe Avenue with a knife. President spokesperson Manana Manjgaladze noted that the decision to pardon him was the result of joint work by the president's administration and the prison ministry. Manana gleefully noting that, it had been a joint effort.
So exactly, though, what we were just talking about. But also, there's a distinction here because he was pardoned, so that's not part of the amnesty.
Right. Batumi City Court resumed hearings on a case against Aslan Abashidze, former head of administration in Ajada. The UNM prosecutor's office accused Abashidze of killing Nodar Imnadze, deputy chairman of the Ajara Supreme Council, of setting up illegal armed groups, of committing terrorist attacks, and of the abuse of office. Abashidze's trial began in 2006. He was sentenced in absentia to 15 years in prison and a fine equivalent to $60 million. Abashidze's lawyer still claims that Abashidze is not guilty and that they can prove his innocence.
Is he in Moscow? Do we know that?
He's in Russia somewhere. I don't know. Some professorship at some, you know, not so glamorous institution. Who knows? He made a pile of money. The way, for those who don't know, he was appointed actually by Gamze Khurdia then sort of took over Ajada as his own, set up a border. There are these guys in these bright blue shirts that were the Ajara border guards that would ask you for 10 lari when you were coming in. And he had increasingly bad elections there, set up the Revival Party, which became the sort of main opposition coalition in the 1999 elections. The way he worked it was that people's jobs would be in jeopardy if they were to ever criticize him, and so people didn't. Usually, he made money from charging for customs. Oil export. So it was not. It was really just oil. I mean, it wasn't the other stuff. There was smuggling of other stuff, but what he made the money on was oil coming from Azerbaijan out through Batumi, and then imports would come in from Turkey, and there was a big. I went there a couple times, and there was a big sort of field, kind of in the middle of town, where trucks would come in. The stuff would be repackaged. A Turkish truck would come in; it would be repackaged as a sort of domestic shipment, as if all of these different whatever they were, toothbrushes or jacuzzis or something like that, had been manufactured somehow in Ajada, And then a Georgian truck would then, take them to Tbilisi or Lilo or wherever, and he would pocket the difference, keeping that money out of the budget and making a pile of money. So he is certainly a wildly corrupt individual. What's interesting is that Otsneba has a number of people, that are quite associated with Abashidze in their in their group one way or another, and it'll be interesting to see. Whether what they say about that case and whether, I mean, if Abashidze comes back, that's, that really means something.
Well, let's not forget Christian Democrats, too.
What about the Christian Democrats?
That they have people from Abashidze as well.
Yeah, indeed, the leader of the Christian Democrats. Although, you know, Targamadze was very, very close to Abashidze, but was not one of the, I mean, you know, people
didn't... He was like the spokesperson.
Yeah, he was sort of like the spokesperson. So, I mean, there wasn't necessarily monetary involvement. Not that that's not, you know, doesn't mean something, but he was certainly very close to Abashidze. He was very tight with Abashidze's daughter.
Fun fact. So there are two Gyorgobas in Georgia, which is, you know, St. George is the patron saint of Georgia. And the first one, well, whatever, the one is November 23rd, which happens to be the day of the Rose Revolution. Mm-hmm. The other one is May 6th, which is also the day that Ajada was retaken by Misha, who walked across the river after the bridge had been blown up and triumphantly...
Like Jesus, like walking across the river? Or it was
In fact, they, supposedly they sort of held the news until after midnight so that it could be the second year. You know, he actually sort of left a little bit before, but they sort of, you know, held on to it so that it could, you know, it could look a little more divine. You know, so speaking of ancient political figures, Tbilisi City Court has stopped the case against Sodna Gamzakhurdia, son of Georgia's first president, Zviad Gamzakhurdia, nationalist wacko, who is accused of spying for Russia and plotting to overthrow the government in November 2007. This is Sodna, not Zviad.
This guy, this poor Tsotne, was just released from prison on October 23rd after serving 3 years in jail. He was originally put in jail for unlawful possession of weapons and intent to murder a 13-year-old. So he got 9 years for that. He then had his time extended for 3 years for attempting to bribe a hospital prison guard because he ended up in the hospital prison somehow. So he's been then he was charged with new charges, which is what we're referring to here, related to spying. So I think that this man might just be someone's special target.
Yeah, let's cut Port Sotne a little bit of slack. So following up on last week's story about former high-ranking Interior Ministry official Oleg Melnikov, who is wanted by Georgian authorities for beating up policemen. He was detained in Ukraine last week when Georgia put him on the Interpol watch list. On Tuesday, Ukraine's court sent Melnikov to prison for 40 days. During this period, law enforcers will make a decision about his extradition. Ministry of Defense is giving its secret phone surveillance service to the Interior Ministry. Defense Minister Irakli Alasani said, quote, "We have had a very bad experience in recent years of using these means against political opposition. We do not want to maintain this system in our structure," end quote. On Monday, Alasani announced the appointment of two new deputies, Zaza Broladze and Tamuna Karasonidze, former head of Transparency International Georgia, the hardest working NGO.
Everything was always coming out of the Ministry of Internal Affairs, though. I don't remember stuff coming out of the Ministry of Defense in terms of recordings and secret surveillance.
Well, they evidently had that capability. They may not have publicized it as gleefully as the Interior Ministry did, but, you know, maybe he said, we don't want to have that capability.
We just don't even want them,
Sololaki hipster author Tara Isabella Burton won the Shiva Naipaul Memorial Prize with her essay entitled Tbilisi, The Edge of the Real.
That's pretty real.
That was cool. Published in The Spectator, the British newspaper. It's good. Read it.
She's a beautiful writer.
Yeah, she really is. She really is good. So everybody check that out. We'll stick it on the website, but it's really good. Congratulations to Tara for winning that.
I should say she writes beautifully. Sorry.
Yeah. Minister of Reintegration Paata Zakharashvili said that the country's return to the CIS is a turned page issue for Tbilisi. Several days before, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko in Minsk at a meeting with the CIS, Baltic countries, and Georgia said that he would make every effort to return Georgia to the CIS, and he's ready to kneel to the Georgian leadership to make this happen. Also, if they will give him money. Okay, so first of all, who cares about the CIS and why is Lukashenko like
Russia does.
Just for the heck of it? I mean...
I don't know. I mean, what's the benefit other than visa
for anybody?
Visa-free travel.
Because Russia has a free trade agreement with, I think, Kazakhstan, but that doesn't include all CIS.
No, they were, trying to do some collective free trade agreement with maybe like four other countries. It was a big thing for the WTO because
right. I mean, original CIS was kind of an alliance against NATO, right?
I think that this is just, you know, Russia's continued effort to just, you know, make Lukashenko do anything and everything that they want him to do in exchange for, you know, keeping him alive with gas is my theory. According to TI Georgia, there are MPs in both the majority and the opposition who run and own businesses despite this being prohibited by law. At least 10 MPs from the UNM and 26 MPs from Georgian Dream have connections with at least one company. For example, TI Georgia names UNM MP Gocha Enukidze, who's the owner of Eber Company and controls Lukoil, that controls the Lukoil chain, and Georgian Dream MP Goglashvanya, who is listed as the director of LLC Bosner, which imports alcoholic beverages, cigars, and brandy. Now, wait a minute.
No,
surely it's not illegal for MPs to own and operate businesses.
It's illegal for them to operate.
To operate it, to run it. So usually they give it to their sons or wives.
They just transfer.
Yeah.
Amazing, considering that the, you know, majoritarian deputies have done practically nothing other than their businesses, you know, during the last...
And that's why you don't want them to do that, because then all they do is to run their businesses.
But how can you police that?
Wait, is this information from the public... what are those called?
Public registry.
The public registry, asset declarations?
Bealbot.com does not source, you know, so we're trying to...
Asset declarations are only coming out in
once
early 2012, so only then we will know what all the MPs
2013,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So that there's a delay until they come out.
But this is anyway current information.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you might remember actually there was one MP I think in the time that I've been here. It was around 2006. He was removed from Parliament because of his business associations. And I think
he was removed was not because of his business.
No,
that was the pretext.
This was the pretext, and I think he's the only one who's ever been removed from Parliament. I can't remember. I didn't look it up, but there was one guy. Someone might remember.
Shocked to find business associations in that, you know. Today, Russia state-controlled Channel One Media claimed to have uncovered new evidence incriminating detailed opponents of. Detained opponents of Russian President Vladimir Putin and planning riots with the help of Georgian lawmaker Givi Targamadze. Channels allege that activists Konstantin Lebedev and Leonid Razvozyayev met the Georgian member of parliament Tbilisi to discuss the results of an anti-Vladimir Putin protest on May 6th. Both have been detained on charges of plotting mass riots.
We reported on this earlier. I don't remember when. It was kind of when the charges first came out. So what's new here is that they say they have evidence and incriminating details.
But it's like before they said Targamadze gave them $500 or something. Like it's like not enough to fuel
and this,
a
and
revolution.
And this is the guy. You know, this is the guy who was like, you know, threatening. They brought him from Ukraine. It was a big mess. I mean,
yeah,
this
they kidnapped
is like,
him. I think.
This has really no relevance for Georgia. I mean, this is just all about how completely sad and ridiculous. The Kremlin has become in its efforts to try to protect itself. You know, not that Givi Targamadze hasn't been, you know, running around, you know, talking to everybody who will listen about, you know, all these sorts of things. But I mean,
this is the head of the former head of the Parliamentary Committee on Defense, no? Or
yeah, maybe Defense Committee, maybe something like that. Yeah, his influence comes not so much. He's an old Liberty Institute guy, very well informed and. But not, you know, his position was never really that significant, but he's always been quite inner circle with that crew. And he was the one that was in 2004 in Kiev, you know, Georgia really had very little to do with the Orange Revolution. It was just, you know, that there were a lot of people there. Parliament elected Uchen Nanuashvili as ombudsman for a 5-year term. He has worked in the human rights field for 15 years.
I had always wondered, because of the way that Sosar Subadi ended the way he started behaving towards the end of his tenure as ombudsman, how you get rid of an ombudsman, because it's a 5-year term.
You don't.
The parliament can impeach them, and I think you have to have 2/3 of parliament can, yeah, move to impeach the ombudsman. I just, not that I'm suggesting that there will be problems, I just thought that this was interesting because what has tended to happen is that people get put in the ombudsman position that the ruling party tends to think are on their side. And then, I mean, with Subhadi, for example, Subhadi was kind of put in there to be the yes man. Yeah, he was kind of the UNM person. And then they actually started performing their jobs and got really upset with many of the human rights violations that they saw, and I think quickly became less friendly with the ruling government. But but they left him there, which is why I'd always wondered what do you, and then he became increasingly political. He started making political statements even towards the end of it. Remember he started saying, if I were in power, this type of stuff wouldn't happen. Right. And he literally was making just absolutely outrageous statements, which is why I was wondering, what do you have to do to get rid of this man from his position?
So Subhari went a little bit off the rails. His judgment is questionable at times. He was very respected and, worked for people in terms of human rights. But when he became political and then after he was a former ombudsman, he's had offered modest amounts to the rest of the crew.
And he sided with Okruashvili, with Vurjanats, with all the radical figures in the past couple of years, right?
Right. 2010 sort of, local elections. He's kind of bopped around from with whoever, sort of always being kind of number three or four on the list. If passed, a new draft amendment in Parliament would give Parliament to the right to dismiss members of the Supreme Court. For the Supreme Council of Justice had this right. According to the amendment, the country's Parliament is authorized to dismiss judges in the Supreme Court, while any other judge can be dismissed by the Council of Justice. As far as I know, they asked the Venice Commission about this, but of course, have not gotten an answer yet. So it'll be interesting to see what they have to say.
Yeah. Well, this would be very similar then to the way that the former government acted in terms of asking for the Venice Commission's opinion, but making a decision anyway.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know what they want to do. This is a complicated issue because the Council of Justice. This is an extremely complicated issue. It'll be interesting. The Venice Commission, can be quite goofy on these things, but it'll be interesting to hear what they actually have to say about that.
And there's a lot of competition now between the Ministry of Justice, which is obviously Georgian Dream, and the Supreme Council of Justice, which oversees the courts, and that's largely UNM people.
Right.
And they are the ones who kind of discipline the judges, who nominate judges, move them around. And so now we have this situation, which I don't think is bad. It's a good coincidence that the judges tend to be more on the opposition side, and the prosecutors more on the government side, I would assume.
Yeah.
So that kind of creates a balance in political terms right now. It's not the ideal situation for an independent judiciary, but at least.
Well, we'll want to take a look at the law, and that's what I write about in Fides Politron, the Georgian journalist, this past week. But also looking at the judicial appointments. Who the people are that they appoint, how loyal they are, and that sort of thing, and how transparent the new courts are. They became, it was impossible to find out what was going on in cases, particularly criminal cases, and so few of them went to trial anyway. They were all, done by plea bargain, and those were completely untransparent. And so, it'll be, if things are transparent and you can, for example, get information on how new appointees compared to, old appointees rule and that sort of thing, it'll be, interesting.
Yeah. We also talked about how the media will be readmitted.
Right. Part of the draft that they sent to the Venice Commission included court reporting, so that reporters are now allowed to film, to do audio recordings, and to write notes in courtroom. Because before, some reporters have been kicked out of the courtroom after taking notes, and then the judge said, "Don't take notes on a notepad." Then they started writing on their hands, and they got kicked out for disturbing the process or something.
Very important amendments have been made to the draft law on free trade and competition regarding pharmaceutical companies. The Parliament is very likely to pass the bill, which limits the right to own, either directly or indirectly, income-generating shares in more than one company, pharmaceutical company. It prevents an economic agent from running pharmaceutical production, health insurance, and medical services simultaneously, and introduces strict sanctions for noncompliance, including alienation of assets. For those who don't know, pharmaceuticals have been a sort of complicated cartel here for quite a while.
Not to mention when they had that 100 new hospitals thing, if you recall, that the pharmaceutical companies were all somehow somehow aligned, maybe unofficially, with many of the construction companies. At Block Georgia, and the one that was...
Right. And isn't the owner and director of PSP in Parliament, he kind of was UNM, he then became more and more independent and was moving over to the Georgian Dream side, so...
Yeah, indeed. It's a pretty grubby business. There are a lot of discussions about reorganizing healthcare. The Ministry of Healthcare is talking about a new state insurance project. All we know is that the government is going to start an insurance fund. It will most likely be without a public health insurance option. The Five-Lari voluntary insurance program, which was scrapped 3 years ago, will likely be reintroduced. 256 million Lari will be spent in 2013.
It's probably in addition to what is already spent.
Yeah, it's really, this is an important issue, and it seems like there are conversations going on about what to do about the healthcare. We'll try and figure out what we can and let you know.
There was also a couple of weeks ago, the healthcare minister wanted to resign, and there were some media reports about him resigning, and he had apparently confirmed that already, but then he stayed. Apparently was not allowed to resign.
On Saturday, Bidzina said that Misha asked that he release several imprisoned members of their party in exchange for appointing new ambassadors to foreign countries. Under Georgian law, the president recalls and appoints new ambassadors with the approval of the foreign minister. Foreign Minister Maya Panjakidze asked Misha to replace some diplomats a month ago. On Wednesday, Justice Minister Tsiloukiani declared that Giga Bokeri, a National Security Council secretary, asked that she stop criminal prosecutions in exchange for constructive and normal relations between UNM and Georgian Dream.
But they've got no bargaining chip here. I mean, why would the Georgian Dream acquiesce to this? You know, because the ambassadors aren't going to work against Georgia's interests.
They are right now, apparently.
They're
not picking up the phones. Like, it's a mess.
I mean,
some of them, not all of them.
The ambassadors, you know, in certain cases seem to be, in certain cases, in some cases they're, you know, waiting to work for the new regime, and the new regime is not necessarily taking them up on the offer. In other cases, I mean, they're pretty actively working, at least, you know, in terms of public relations against the winners of the election, which they find, I think, a little bit frustrating.
But that's really, I mean, totally, you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face then, because what's the end game?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the presidential election?
Who knows? On Saturday, Ivanishvili said that Misha asked that he... Oh, sorry. Panjakidze confirmed on Monday that Bidzina, who is currently a citizen of France, may lose his premier post if his Georgian citizenship is restored. Quote, if he is restored citizenship of Georgia and at the same time has dual citizenship, at least for an hour or two, he will automatically lose his premier post since a person with dual citizenship is not entitled to hold this post. This is an absurd norm, end quote, Panjakidze said.
He could, like, build a machine or something. With one hand, he signs, like, the decree, and with the other, he, like, has a shredder where he runs his French passport
through or something.
Or maybe he should write to France and say, can you please make a special exception for me and make me a stateless citizen, a stateless person? Because that's the problem, is that France will not take away his passport and make
until he signs a Georgian citizenship,
because they will not make someone a stateless person.
Oh, sounds all very legalistic to me. Misha lost one of his two jets that the defense ministry bought for him a year ago. The reason for this decision was a large deficit at the defense ministry. Gulfstream 5, worth $160 million U.S., will be returned to the company it was leased from. Misha claimed that he only uses one plane, a Bombardier Challenger, and that the other was for officials to use. The natural gas consumer tariff will be decreased by 5 tetri per cubic meter of gas. The current tariffs were introduced in 2007 and are just over 50 tetri in Tbilisi. Study of the new parliament building in Kutaisi shows that the level of oxygen is lower than the normal levels, while the level of carbon dioxide is higher. study also showed there's a problem with the ventilation. Vahang Varamia, president of the company that studied the Parliament building, declared that presumably this is why employees suffer discomfort, unpleasant feelings, and headaches. Unpleasant feelings for different reasons, but okay. You know, I'm sure the carbon dioxide doesn't help.
That's because we reported that people were kind of falling over and feeling queasy, right?
Yeah.
Or not so saying very reasonable things.
Yeah.
it's the lack of oxygen, I'm sorry.
Exactly. The fact that they didn't have time to do a ventilation system to get it finished by the election.
So they should just have a whole bunch of people from the high mountainous areas.
And stop smoking inside the parliament.
There would be that. Parliamentary discussion took place about products of a sexual nature last week. This became a wildly popular topic on Facebook and other social media sites. Member of Parliament Kovid Davidashvili, a condom expert, explained that, quote, there are two types of condoms. One has a protective function, and the second functions only to satisfy sexual desire. The latter type of condoms will not be sold, and the other kind will be sold, end quote. The proposed amendments would prohibit selling products of a sexual nature near schools and in kids' clothes and toy shops, and also to people under 18.
Oh, that's
bad. To people under 18 is pretty bad.
That's bad.
I don't think so far there's, like, in the clothing store right next door, I don't think you can get condoms there.
I don't know. I mean, this is... Why are they doing this?
Okay.
Where is this coming from?
I have never seen condoms being sold in a place that sells anything for children.
But where does this come from?
They don't want women, apparently, to have the, you know, the... I'm sorry, it's a family show.
It's a family show here. You know, they don't want women to have...
I won't elaborate on that, but apparently when they're talking about pleasure, I think that they're probably talking about the ones that add to women's pleasure.
Also, the enforcement will be interesting. There will be special police.
I just flew in last night, and I know at the vending machine in Heathrow Airport, I picked up a couple of ribbed jobs and took a picture there right in front of the Welcome to Georgia. Of course. I mean, you know, who wouldn't? In fact, I would like everybody who flies into Georgia, you know, go to the vending machines at the airport of origin and snap a shot as you come in through baggage control and put that up on Facebook. But yeah, I don't understand where this comes from. I mean, what
is it? The Petrarch, maybe?
I don't know. And there was someone who was an interview of somebody in one of the committees, a woman who was interviewed about this, saying that, you know, this is a good idea or something like that. And then somebody found some, you know, pictures on Facebook that are the kind of pictures you don't want of yourself on Facebook that were posted around her. I don't know. I don't get it.
But who supports an initiative like that? Who cares about that?
I don't know, man. I mean, it's not like there's not plenty of other stuff to do.
I mean, the thing that is really important here is actually that they're not going to sell condoms to kids under 18 because, I mean, there's still an issue, I think, of kids having... sex. I mean, kids getting married in order to have sex. I mean, I don't know. That has been a big issue in Georgia. You hear about 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds who get married, and they do it because they want to have sex.
Right. Yeah, it's true. That's a very bad idea. So anybody knows anything about where this came from, let us know in great detail. Following
with pictures
and pictures, yeah, and everything, you know, with what they're specifically talking about, we want to, because I don't have a big experience in these type of, you know, female pleasure items. Okay, following up on last week's story about a religious argument in Xincaro, on Monday, a reconciliation ceremony was held in the village between Orthodox Christians and Muslims, where they agreed that only local Muslims will be allowed to hold prayer services there, while those from other areas must stay away.
What?
Earlier, BI said in a statement posted on the government's website that confrontation between Christians and Muslims in some regions of Georgia is unacceptable, and the government will not allow people's freedom of conscience to be violated.
But which side was he talking about?
Who knows? Sounds like let's keep everybody happy. But, you know, what, some Muslims from outside can't come in? I mean, what do we have? We have, like... you know, a bunch of, like, you know, Pakistani Mujahideen, like, marching into this village? Or is this, like, you know, neighboring village? Or
I wish I were a Pakistani Mujahideen, because I would go and hold a prayer service there. Right in the middle.
All right. For those of you who don't know, you know, Cameron wears a full burqa to the show, usually. Anyway, Imedi TV reported that news journalists of Rustavi Ori TV went on strike today due to a decrease in their salaries. Imedi TV said that TV's news team didn't produce video reports today, while some of the news presenters were on strike as well. Kvitis Palitha reported on Monday that Gurumashvili Hospital in Temka, in Tbilisi, detained a baby boy from a socially vulnerable family because they could not afford to pay the 350 lari hospital bill. The family was allowed to take the baby after they paid 150 lari, provided they pay the rest in the future.
Or give up their firstborn child.
Or give up their firstborn child. This goes against the law regarding socially vulnerable people's children who are exempt from medical bills up to the age of 6. BP, Georgia's largest foreign investor, had a social responsibility reporting workshop last week about their two major 2012 building projects, building two major compressor stations and 115 kilometers of new pipeline adjacent to a UNESCO World Heritage Site. They also had a fascinating socioeconomic survey on all villagers and landowners along the route who would be affected by the pipeline's construction. 46% rely on pensions and other social allowances is their primary source of income. The average monthly income is 370 lari, with the majority assessing their income to have decreased over the past 5 years. 49% estimate their family's nutrition as inadequate. Two-thirds of respondents consider it extremely important that their children should get higher education, and 100% of those who gave this ranking think it equally important for boys and girls.
BP sits on a whole bunch of data, actually. It's really interesting when you go and talk to them, because they've got so much information that obviously is relevant to the work that they do, but, I mean, just what you were reading off, they have also in Azerbaijan. I mean, they in every country they work in, every project that they have, I think they have this amount of detail.
Interesting. Hmm. Hope they release it.
It's on the global website, yeah. But you have to look a while to find it. It's in some Word documents, but it's up there.
Huh. On Monday, TI held a presentation on Centerpoint's construction fraud. The group, owned by former government members, has left 6,200 customers without apartments, stealing $310 million. For more information, check out transparency.ge's blog post on the topic.
The other thing is the company that took over, DevEx, has apparently been asking for contributions from people who already paid as well. That's what I understood.
So that their apartment buildings are finished.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people are kind of getting
coerced into it. I don't understand. I don't envy them the task of mopping up after that mess. On the other hand, it's interesting. I just saw Archilashvili a few months ago walking around, so he seems to be in town, and I don't remember a trial about that. Now, this in from a dedicated TpeelPod.com listener. 68% of Georgians, according to an NDI commission poll, want to restore the railway link to Russia via breakaway Abkhazia. The NDI poll has a write-up by civil.ge with a link that has the publicly released information. They don't have information about the relative popularity of the parties after the election. I have no doubt they asked the questions about the popularity of the parties, because they certainly asked a bunch of other questions, but for some reason didn't feel comfortable publishing it.
Did I mention this last week about the railway? Because everyone's talking about the railway through Abkhazia right now. And basically...
Everyone in Abkhazia, or...?
Well, I don't know. The people I talk to, I've been talking about it. So,
I mean, from a geostrategic standpoint, or a train spotting standpoint? Or like what are you...
from a geostrategic standpoint. So... the interesting thing about that is that there has actually been a feasibility study that was conducted. And the feasibility study essentially said that you cannot restore the railway that had existed, that there are in certain areas you cannot even see where the railway was. Therefore, you would have to completely build a new railway.
Why?
Because you can't restore the one that existed before. It's just... completely, it's damaged to the point that you cannot restore it.
Huh. Interesting. Public registry has announced online registration of businesses is now available on mygov.ge. There's a real risk with this of increased shell companies. I'm not sure this is such a good step. Why are they doing this?
Well, it's part of the e-government move. I mean, you can do almost everything that you can access publicly, like, you know, register a lease contract, register land ownership, all that stuff online. But I think you have this ID card with the chip on it, mm-hmm. and then you need a card reader in order to use this my.gov.ge. So basically it identifies who you are, and then you do everything electronically, but you have this electronic signature, so they know who you are. So I think you still have to have a name about who owns the company, who registered it. So I'm not sure if it increases the risk of shell companies. We will see. It's certainly not Delaware, where you don't need to put down any name about who owns a company. You just go online and, you know, pay $200 and you have a company without telling them who you are.
Don't be knocking the Constitution State.
But I wonder if this will have any impact on identity theft, though, because identity theft is really not an issue here as a person who's just had her wallet stolen. I went through the whole rigmarole. Nonetheless, but not really thinking that someone's going to try and use my license to, you know, do all sorts of stuff under my name, but...
Let's hope not.
No, but I mean, now you essentially could...
No, you need, like, a PIN code, you need the card reader, you need the card, and, yeah. I mean, there are some passwords.
I realize that, but I mean, that's the same for, I think, the same security level that is related to your credit card as well, and they get stolen.
Yeah.
The Turkish air company Pegasus will start flights between Batumi and the Turkish resort Alanya.
I think it's Antalya, probably.
Well, I thought it was Antalya, too. I was told that it's not. It's Alanya, which is near Antalya and is a place popular with Georgian tourists. Why it's going from Batumi and Antalya, I don't know.
If it's raining in Batumi, you can hop on a plane.
I guess. I don't know. And it's not Alanya, which is the Ossetian name for Ossetia, not to be confused with that. Who knows? The flight is 4 times a week. Tickets are €119 round trip. GeoCapital number of the week, which, to make full disclosure that I'm a little tired of making, I am a shareholder of. This week it's 0.3%, which is the proportion of people in Georgia who are active members of a political party, according to data collected in 2008 by the World Value Survey. This is the lowest in all countries surveyed in the data set. Other countries with low political party membership are Jordan, 0.5%.
Which
Morocco,
is a one-party state. There's no other parties right, allowed.
Thereby increasing your incentives enormously to join. Morocco, also one-party state, 0.9%. And Russia, 0.8%. Topping the table is Mali, a country that has been in the news over the past few months, where 19.8% of its citizens are active members in political parties. Mali's kind of a mess right now. Not sure what that says about political party membership, but it's certainly low in Georgia. So get out there and join some parties.
I might just mention that the Caucasus Research Resource Center did a study. Yes, CRRC. With which I'm also affiliated. They did a report on social capital, and I think they might even have more updated numbers than 2008.
And the same was true for, I think, all clubs and associations in Georgia. So very few people are part of a chess club or a football club or, you know, a rugby team or an NGO or anything like
Georgians
that.
Georgians are bowling alone.
Yeah, the social capital report is quite interesting and is available online. So just look it up.
Quick correction. Last week we stated that Tom Duvall was the lead author, or we just said he was the author of an article proposing a truth commission for Georgia. Actually, he co-authored the piece with Ani Dolidze, who is the lead author. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Formerly of Gyla?
Formerly of Gyla.
Hmm.
This week's Colga movies are Tomorrow, Role Models from 2008, Monday, The Wishing Tree from 1976.
It's a Georgian movie.
Georgian movie. Wednesday, Since Otar Left, 2003, also Georgian. 8 o'clock, Dom Kino cost from Rift Valley Metro, they cost 7 lari. The Gudauri Development Fund have two standard packages for winter ski seasons. The membership card for children is 300 lari, 500 for adults. Students, it's 150 lari. For more information, check the Facebook page with Gudauri Official. That's G-U-D-A-U-R-I Official.
That's probably season tickets or something like
season
that.
Season tickets, yeah. National Gallery has an exhibition of Niko Pirosmani's paintings till March 30th, 2013, in honor of the painter's 150th birthday. Gallery's located at Rustavelli 11. Go check that out if you don't know his work. He's great and famous. You'll recognize it. If you're in New York City tonight, check out the opening of Colors Insulting to Nature,
that's a great name.
Which is by Eteric Kadua, her collaborative installation with her brother Gocha. Also has paintings by Peter Glass. I don't know Gocha, but Eteri is a very, very talented painter. The opening reception is today, December 13th, 6 to 9 p.m. at Gallery 151, which is at 132 West 18th Street in Manhattan. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email is tbilpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum at our website, www.tbilpod.com. This week, we'll finish with 1965 Bob Dylan and Subterranean Homesick Blues.
Medicine, I'm on the pavement, thinking about the government, a man in a trench coat, fly driving.